This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hello, everybody. It's a Friday, and that means Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed here. Mr. Mayor, hello there, and a good morning to you.
And you? Things are good?
Yeah, things are fine with me. My question
is... Heat wave is a little bit over. This is the hottest July for a long time.
Read that in the paper this morning. They say maybe on record.
Yeah, and the coldest in California for by 5 degrees or something.
Yeah, my son was in San Francisco, and he said it was like 55 degrees in San Francisco. So what can you do? Just the weather, right?
Just the weather.
You're going to go to Rhinebeck tomorrow for the wedding?
I am not going to the wedding.
You're not?
No. I mean, I wish them well. I've met Chelsea once. I sat at a dinner table with her and talked to her. She was charming. She's well-educated and very poised young lady.
Have you spent time with the senior Clintons? Bill and Hillary?
Those two I know very well. Mm-hmm. Haven't been with Bill or Hillary in a month or so, but both do a lot. She works as hard as anybody, traveling around the world. Bill has built this Clinton Global Initiative. He's not sitting around.
No,
he's doing things.
He certainly isn't.
I'm sure it'll be a good wedding, and I wish the young ones well.
All right, let's get right into it. This past hour, I had both Peter King and Congressman Anthony Weiner on the line over the 9/11 bill that was not passed yesterday in Congress. The yelling and screaming everybody has heard. Your thoughts on the fact that it didn't make it? I mean, this is
an
important
bill. This was an attack on America. These are people who went in first for rescue and then recovery. That's, it's Americans trying to help Americans, and Congress can't. It's unwilling to stand up. The Republicans, Peter King is a stand-up guy, but I think only a dozen Republicans voted for it, and shame on the others. I mean, how can they go and preach patriotism, and then when it comes down to doing it, partisan politics? And on the Democratic side, it is even more of an outrage. Democrats do have a majority. They set the rules, and they could have brought up this bill and passed it. There was a majority that would have passed it. But they didn't want what they did is they brought it up in a way as where you need 2/3. They could have brought it up in a way all you need is a majority of the Congress to vote for it. The trouble with that is the Republicans could have put some amendments on, which would have forced some of the Democrats to take a hard vote yes or no. And they didn't want to go on the record. And you can't have it both ways. The Democrats control the House. And if they don't want to control the House, turn it over to the Republicans. But if you control the House, you got to have the courage to stand up. And this is just the typical partisanship in Washington. Both sides of the aisle, neither side should be happy looking themselves in a mirror. But in the end, it is a Democratic House.
You're absolutely right, and they could have done it. I said to both of these congressmen this morning that I think I speak for a vast majority of Americans, don't understand why you people down there don't, on something as important as this, that helps your customers, your constituency, get better with the 9/11 money and for their health, put the stuff aside and just vote it up. Just voted in.
Look, in all fairness, the two guys you had on this morning, Weiner and
they both voted for
and
it.
King, both voted for it. And both, look, neither of those two guys are shrinking violets. They have the courage. I don't always agree with either one of them, but they have the courage to stand up and say what they say, and they would take the hard votes. It's the leadership in the end, I guess, that decides what comes in. Every legislature, it's the leadership that decides what you can vote on. And you see it in Albany as well. Don't bring up the bill if some of your caucus is going to have to vote in a way that's not in their interest. So they don't. You want another outrage? We had this FMAP money, these Medicaid money. It was in the Senate bill passed. It was in the House bill passed. They go to conference and all of a sudden the House passes another bill taking it out. Why? Because a handful of the House would have had a tough time voting for it if the money was in there, the Medicaid money. So 40-odd states around this country all of a sudden don't have Medicaid money, and a whole bunch of cities, and all of them had put it in their budgets, and now everybody's running around trying to figure out will they get it or not. They don't know how to budget. They don't know how to make decisions. We got to hire teachers or not hire teachers or fire or this or that. Not teachers necessarily, but just the whole plethora of services cutting back for the fall. We don't know. And it's just total politics. why on earth the House ever passed that second bill, or why the New York delegation didn't stop it, I don't know. Now, you do this. Look, Crowley, one of our congressmen, has worked as hard as anybody for the FMAP money. He's worked hard for this, the Zerota bill. But it's, in the end, John, it's both sides of the aisle. The Republicans voting no on everything, and incidentally, it wasn't much different when the when the Republicans were in charge and the Democrats. Don't have a, this is not one ideology versus another. This is mine versus yours, and on the other side of that transaction, it's yours versus mine. But in the end, you blame the leadership, and our delegation has to bring home the bacon, and they can't, we don't have enough power in Congress to pass a bill, but we do have enough power to stop a bill. And they could have stopped the second bill, and they didn't. And now we have this chaos. I don't know whether we're going to get the money, and I don't know what we're going to do.
This has been escalating.
I mean, I know what we're going to do if you tell me what the results are. I just don't know what's going to happen in Washington.
This partisanship that we're talking about seems to, over the last 10 years or so, maybe longer than that, to only have been escalating. And there's no reason to believe that it won't continue to escalate.
Well, my mother
How
always,
do you turn it around?
My mother always says the good old days were never the good old days.
Correct.
But having said that, it used to be true that in the Senate, Republicans and Democrats went out and played golf together and had dinner together. Now they don't even talk. They literally, there's some exceptions, but generally speaking, they don't talk. They don't invite each other to a meeting to talk about things. In Albany, sometimes they don't tell the other side when they're going in and out of session. I mean, literally, it's a lot of petty stuff. I think part of it is redistricting. When you redistrict so that you're safe from an attack from the other, an opponent from the other side of the aisle.
You feel you can do anything.
No, you don't. That's funny. You'd think you would. What it does is you can't move to the middle because your challenge is going to be from your flank. So from the left in the Democratic case, from the right in the Republican case, although in other periods of life it's been the reverse. And so they can't move. So it's harder for them to come to the middle. And passing legislation governing is about building consensus and doing things together. And they are unwilling to do that. Because they're worried about, well, in the primary. The primary elections become everything when you have redistricting. It's also true, incidentally, that with this talk radio and talk television and talking heads, instant news, 24 hours, they walk up to you, they stick a microphone in your mouth in front of you and say, okay, John, what do you think about this? And you have to say something. You say something. And then later on, you find that the facts were different. Oops. But then if you, goodness knows, if you change your mind, oh, flip-flop and that sort of thing. So now all of a sudden you're locked into a position that you know is wrong, you don't believe in, and what are you going to do? And then you have the bloggers to add on top of this, and they write things that just, in some cases, literally aren't true. There's no editing. There's no accountability. You know, we had the laws of this country allow the Fourth Estate to express opinions and not be subject to libel suits generally. But there's an assumption, or at least there was when those laws, or when the Second Amendment was, First Amendment was interpreted that way, that sort of you believed that there would be some training and responsible editing. And
anybody with a computer can write a blog.
Sure. And you don't, you know, say, well, people will know the difference. The people don't know the difference. And then there's things like the disgraceful editing of that woman's tape. I think it was Bill Riley, O'Reilly, who stood up and did say, hey,
a number of us said, yeah. He apologized.
He apologized. And he's dead right. I mean, he's got to write this opinion. I think he's a nice guy. I don't agree with him on probably very many things. But he's honest, and that's quality journalism. It may be an opinion you don't like, but it's well thought out. And when he makes a mistake, he admits it, and people know who he is, and whatever television or radio venues he has, they you can track him back. You can send him an email. It unfortunately, because of all of this, not blaming the press for everything, but if you want to know why there's more partisanship today, it starts out with redistricting, I think, and then has been exacerbated by
the press is the gasoline on the fire, so to speak.
Yeah,
the accelerant.
We have something different today that we didn't have before, and it's why financial markets respond so violently. It isn't that the fundamentals are any difference; it's that we have a communication system that we never had before. It took a long time to get information from here to there, during which time you could find out whether it was right, and you had to think about it, and that's why. Today, everything 24 hours a day is instant. In the financial markets, every transaction, instant, automatic. Get some great benefit out of this stuff, but it also will lead to, in the financial markets, much greater volatility, and in your business, to a much more likely... it's sort of wagging the dog, the tail wagging the dog.
Exactly.
It's the press is creating the reality rather than reporting on it.
And I'm not sure there's an answer to my original question. What is it that we can do about it? I'm not sure there is a lot.
Well, you know, we have democracy.
It.
You can go to the Congress has an 11% approval rating at the moment.
Boy, I'll tell you, that would get you a long way in business, wouldn't it?
Doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame. I'll tell you that. it's hard to say. I guess you can go down. You could get. Think about
well,
this.
Well, it can go further down.
It is 11%. They could get their popularity cut in half every day. And they'd still have a positive popularity a billion years from now.
You're right. It wouldn't be very big, but it would be positive. There'd be one person out there that would think they're doing.
Anyways, before we forget to go on, I just wanted to point out. You know, we talked about the Zeroga bill, and this is the people who were working on the rescue and then recovery downtown. We are building out the memorial. I was over there with the World Trade Center Memorial Foundation board the other day, and we have this preview site which you can go and visit, and it sells stuff with that commemorates and remembers what happened on 9/11. And the preview site is scheduled to receive its millionth visitor within the first year of being open. It's amazing. They're going to a little store. So can you imagine when the memorial there will be? It far exceeds our initial projections, and I think it really is a remarkable indication of how people want to pay tribute to the events of 9/11.
You walk out the front door of this building on any day at 111 Broadway, and the languages that you hear from around the world, and that yes, they're coming to see Wall Street, but first and foremost, they're coming to see Ground Zero in the World Trade Center. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We've gone a little long here in this segment. Let's get to some business, and we will come right back. 826, again, that number if you want to get on board here, 800-321-0710. Speaking of numbers, Mr. Mayor, some state numbers, proficiency from, grades 3 through 8, I think, were less than what I think anybody wanted.
Well, that's the wrong context, I think, to look at. It's simply, there's these tests. State says they're harder or easier, who knows. You can compare our performance in the city versus the rest of the state because everybody takes the same test. The minorities and white groups have moved to closer together. The improvement has been dramatic over the last half a dozen years. This year, it was the same as the state. We stayed just below the state. They stayed constant. We stayed constant. Math, English, fourth grade, eighth grade. They didn't go up and they didn't go down this year, but over the last 5 or 6 years, they've gone up. What the state did is they just simply said, okay, instead of 680 being proficient, we're going to make it that 690 is proficient. So all of a sudden, there are fewer people that get this definition of proficiency. I'm not quite sure why they did it. That's not the same. Is it the same as saying we want higher standards? Yeah, but you could have easily said we're not satisfied, which we're not, with 680. We're going to move it to 690. What the danger here is for people to think that the schools have gotten worse, and that's not true. Schools continue to improve, although the test scores last year to this year did not go up, but they didn't go down either. And the state says that this year's test was harder, so maybe if it was, then it's good that they stayed even. The question simply is, if you're going to call, we'll accept 680, or no, we're going to say you're not in level 3, which is this next group, unless you get a 690, whatever the number is. I think it's on 660, 670, where the cutoff is. If proficient, I don't know what proficient means. Are you ready? If you get that score to be proficient, are you ready to win a Nobel Prize? Probably not. But everybody that passes, somebody may be at the top. I mean, it's just a question.
The question that I asked, and another, in fact, Mayor Otish asked exactly the same question, and I was surprised she did. How did the tests get to the level that was believed to be way too low? How did they get dumbed down?
I don't think that.
You don't think they did?
They're totally independent. One thing has nothing to do with another. I don't know whether the tests are hard or easy. If you want, you could have an easy test and insist on higher grades. You could have a more stringent, difficult-to-pass test and accept lower grades and get the same cutoff. It's purely an arbitrary thing of your question should be, why did we say we'd be satisfied? Because some people will say if you get the level fee, we're satisfied. We should not be satisfied with anything. The trouble is people say, well, you know, how well do I have to do before I don't have to do any better? And that's the trouble with a definition like proficient, because you get over the barrier, you say, okay, I don't know why we'd be satisfied with anything less than 100%. And this, I think the score, the highest score you can get, maybe 740 or something, which nobody gets, something like that. Why they don't score at 0 to 100? I have no idea. You start out...
That's lost in the fog of yesterday.
Absolutely. It's all mumbo-jumbo so that the experts can have something to talk about and the talking heads can go and criticize and everybody can interpret different ways. But if you think about it in a score of 0 to 100, if you get to 100, should we say, let's make the test more difficult? Why would you ever not ask people to do more? The question you have to ask is, okay, you're going to hire somebody to work here at your radio station on talk radio. And WOR, how educated do you want them to be? You can say, well, I want them to have a high school diploma or a junior college diploma or a four-year diploma. Or you can look at it differently and say, I want when I interview them to them to be intelligent. Just because they have a diploma doesn't mean they're intelligent. I may be able to do the work and not learn anything. So, you know, the only thing that really matters is the test scores, and the people that write that the schools are worse than we thought just aren't smart enough to understand the numbers. The bottom line is the teachers have worked very hard and done a great job. Not all, not everybody, not with every kid. The principals, the APs, the custodians, the safety officers, the parents, the students, they've all been busting their tail, as you would say. They've all made big improvements. And when nobody thinks we're where we should be, you'll never be where you'd like to be. This is purely a let's cut off and say, I'm going to give you your diploma if you get X. And before, I used to give it if you got half X. Okay, so now you got to do double, but we should never have satisfied.
Will these numbers affect the grading of schools?
No, because the grading of schools are based on, there's a lot of different factors, but fundamentally the essence of it is, did you improve from last year? Because a school that has a bunch of kids from, you know, broken families, a lot of immigrants where they have trouble, they have to learn to speak English as well as learn math, where they a lot of kids who don't have the support services at home that maybe other kids have. But if those kids go from getting, let's say, 600 to 610 on their scores, that's a big deal. One of the newspapers, I can't figure out where they're coming from. They just don't understand numbers. They should send some of these reporters to understand numbers. Over 5 or 6 years.
Maybe they didn't have the appropriate degree.
Or maybe they have an agenda. these national tests, this NAEP scores, we go up 5 years in a row and they say no progress. That's a whole year of learning. I mean, it's, what do you want? And you know, if you want to improve something, to tear down people and say no matter how much they do, it's not enough, you're a failure because you didn't do everything, that is unfortunately the way some people look at it. We want change, but there's never a change that's good enough. We want you to improve, but you haven't gone far enough, so you don't get any credit for doing it. I think the students and the teachers and everybody else, the principals, the parents, everybody else, should sit back and look in a mirror and say, hey, we really are on, and Arne Duncan thinks so too, mm-hmm. and the president thinks so. We are on the right course. And the fact that the state changed what the objective should be, think of proficiency as we're going to try to get everybody up to this level. The trouble with that is you rest on your laurels if you ever get there. I don't even know why we have that proficiency thing, why we have a level 4, 3, 2, 1. But they do. The only numbers, however, that tell you whether the schools are doing a good job are these scores, the 650, 640, whatever those numbers are called. And you don't know whether the test is easier or harder, but if you want to measure New York versus the rest of the state, they all take the same test. We should have a national test. In fact, I would argue we should have an international test. You and I talk about globalization, mm-hmm. and our kids have to compete around the world. And then what's the test that lets you know is your child ready to compete around the world? We really don't have it. There are some national tests, but they're not done for everybody. But
a lot of countries do have national tests.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and, you know, the trouble in America, it's so much states' right, a states' issue, and that. But Arne Duncan's trying to raise the standards.
No, I rarely agree with the president on much, but I will on his education with Arne Duncan and his race to the top.
I have said if I were this president, because I think it's the most important thing you could do, if he could finish his time in office, whether it's 4 years or 8 years, and have made a real difference in public education throughout this country, he should have a pretty big smile on his face, and because the impact of that long term will be his legacy.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've gone a little long. We seem to be doing this rather frequently in this day's broadcast, but let's go right to the half-hour news 4 minutes late. Well, Figs is playing hardball today. We have, let's see here, we have three slots that are open. 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710 for your questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Coming straight ahead here, what happened with the hybrid cabs? I know that the TLC has asked the cab companies to go all hybrid.
There's a judge, Paul Crotty, who's actually a very good guy. He used to be the corporation counsel of the city under Koch, I think. And his son worked for OTB when we ran OTB, and I know the wife. They're great people. But this judge had the nerve to rule against the city. I can't imagine it. What he ruled, and the court just upheld it, was that federal law prohibits cities from setting their own standards, requirements for automobiles in terms of gas mileage, and that is, in effect, what we were doing. And so we don't have the right. Now, the states won the right. Schwarzenegger sued, and he got the right to for states to do it. But cities aren't covered by that decision. So I don't know what we're going to do next.
So the Taxi and Limousine Commission does not have the power to determine or
the federal
direct.
Law that was passed, which I assume was influenced by some of the manufacturers who didn't want cities like ours going and having stricter standards.
Like the Ford Motor Company and their Crown Vic.
Who knows? Keep in mind, if they had not had those requirements, they would have been dominating the world today in automobile sales because our cars would have been better. Instead, they didn't have to make them better. That's where the Japanese and Korean cars all of a sudden came on. And
having said
that, if you look at Toyota, I mean, I think it's fair to say that almost all of the Toyota problems, remember all that terrible press? Yeah. Almost all were driver error.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about that on this program. Having said that about the Crown Vic and the Ford Motor Company, one of the major replacement hybrid cabs is the Ford Escape.
Right.
Which is on the road.
The market is demanding more fuel-efficient cars. And if gasoline prices go up, the market will demand a lot more. The market is sensitive to the price of gasoline. If your objective was to help the environment, you would put a tax on gasoline, maintain a high price, because that would give people the incentive to get better mileage. And you say, oh, the government should never raise prices. We do that all the time. We have lots of things where the government maintains prices to protect the manufacturers. In agricultural commodities, for example, we do it all. The federal government does it all the time. There's price protection. So farmers know when they plant what they're going to get, or, you know, how many cows are going to give milk or whatever. But you would do that. Anyways, that was the issue. Nothing wrong with what we're trying to do. I don't know whether Judge Crotty even agrees with that. Probably does. It's a good thing to do. But the judge's job was not to decide what he liked or not. This is a good judge. His job is to decide what the law says, which you would, given your political philosophy, would argue you don't want activist judges.
Correct.
Interpret the law. I don't have a problem with. I don't know whether I'm not a judge or a lawyer, so I don't know whether I would have read the law the same way. But Crotty is a very smart guy.
Yeah, I heard you agreed with another judge this week. Who? the one on the baggy pants thing.
Government.
The government should not be given summonses for pants.
Right. I mean, if they're naked, you can have some obscenity or whatever, however you describe nudity kind of things, although I think we're much too sensitive to that. Europeans have a much more laissez-faire attitude about it. That's their business. They should set their rules. We should set ours. But the government shouldn't be. Government, you know, if you think about it, Congress is passing bills and focusing on things that really don't matter. I heard today, this morning, somebody was another crazy bill. And what on earth is the federal government getting involved? They are unwilling to pass the Zoroga bill and take care of those who have put their lives at risk and are dying from diseases to protect this country and do what we needed. They're not willing to vote on that. And they can say, oh, I voted. No. When they bring it up knowing it's not going to pass, and they could have brought it up where it's going to pass, but they have to stand up and take tough votes. You don't get any sympathy from me. But they're unwilling to give us a comprehensive immigration bill. They're unwilling to a lot of these things. Nobody's yet fixed the real cost of medical care and what we're going to do about Social Security. I mean, a whole bunch of these things, and instead they focus on these crazy bills.
That's because they can't. It's easy to get it done.
You
can
see the Congress voting a bill on underpants hanging out. I can see it now.
Well, I'm sure.
It'll give the tabloid something to really put on the front page.
You met with the State Financial Control Board this week.
I did.
You were talking about pensions.
Every year.
Is there a solution to the pension problem?
Yes.
Cut them back? Already negotiated pensions?
The law in New York is fascinating. Some very smart lawyer must have gotten this into the state constitution. If the legislature votes a pension benefit, even they can't take it away.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
You think about that. But you could. You don't have to do it for the next round of employees.
You're just asking, modify it for the upcoming.
And incidentally, stop this craziness of keep adding. The state's in dire financial trouble. They can't pass a bill. They have paralysis.
Well,
is the nicest word that you could use about all.
The unions go up there and say,
This year, there's a whole bunch of things they've added.
I think there's a half a dozen of them.
John, they have we used to spend, when I came into office, we paid $1.1 billion a year for pensions. Today, it is $7.6 billion. Another $6.5 billion that during my 8.5 years in office, we've had to come up with more money. This is every year. You wonder why your taxes are where they are? Call your assemblyman, call your senator, and say, I'm not going to take it anymore. And why do they do it? Because you're not organized, and the other side is. And so they pass things that are called presumption bills. Presumption bill says that anything that's covered by it, you don't have to prove that it was caused by an on-the-job injury. You just will assume always, automatically, that was. So if you had a toenail ripped out from when you were 5 years old, we assume it was done while you're on the job. And like the fire department, lungs and heart and stroke and cancer, communicable diseases, all this stuff, automatically, if you have a heart problem, we automatically assume that it's job-related. I happen to think we should take care of our people if it is job-related. But the city can't afford to take care of unlimited health care forever for everybody. And we're doing it for a small group of our employees. Why? Because they organize and they go to Albany and they say, I'm going to get you elected or I'm going to get you out of office and you won't be able to feed your family ever again and your whole career will be ruined unless you... And Albany just does it.
It's insane.
Well, you rile up your listeners.
I do all the time.
Yeah, I know that. But your listeners get riled up and they call and they yell and they scream. You got to vote. And you got to give money. You got to go and say, I'm going to. That's why it's like the NRA is so powerful. The NRA represents a group of people who, when you do the polling, have the opposite view of the NRA. But they don't focus on that. People are scared of a single issue advocacy group because they say to the senator or congressman, because they work at a federal level, but here our unions work at a state level, if you don't vote the way we want, we're going to take you out. We're going to work for somebody else. We're going to give money to somebody else. And you care more about getting reelected than doing what's right. So you cave right away.
Fee change.
It is a disgrace. You know, the president was the other day. I heard him on the radio. Somebody said, I don't think I heard him, campaigning for a bill that would require companies and unions to say where the money's coming from in political ads. I don't happen to have any problems with that, except that what he didn't say was there's a big carve-out for the NRA. It doesn't apply to them. And there's a big carve-out for unions bigger than a certain size.
Right, which is like SEIU or something.
Yeah,
right?
I think it is. It's, but, you know, come on. I agree with it, but do it for everybody. And the business of not including everybody is just wrong. But that's politics, and only if people... We have a democracy. If you don't go out and vote, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have a lot of sympathy for you. I vote. You should vote.
Everybody should vote.
And if you don't vote, you don't have...
Hypocritical. You're hypocritical, and I don't know that you should be able to be... I don't know, you can't police this, but you shouldn't be able to whine then.
Right.
You can't complain.
Well, you still want them to listen and call
in. Well, I do, and I need people to call in, otherwise. I'll have to talk to myself. Interesting development on the repo bill that came out of Albany about that was going to prevent people's cars under a certain amount of money from being towed away, and the unintended consequence of not thinking it through. I thought it was interesting Eric how Schneiderman. It would affect the scoff law.
Yeah, it was a bill passed, I think, without people really thinking. The trouble with Albany is they don't take time. In the city council, I keep coming back and defending the city council, and I can't get anybody to understand just how good they really are. In the city council, they would debate this. They'd have experts come in. They have hearings. They drag it on and drive you crazy. But they really, everybody's got a chance to weigh in and think about what the consequences are of a bill if it gets passed and implemented. In Albany, they don't do that thing that way. Generally, it's done by a small group of people. It's given out to the members. They have to vote on it. There's a law in Albany that says that you have to have 3 days between the bill being written and it being voted on so that you can think about it intelligently and ask questions.
Maybe read it.
Unless it's imperative that it gets done quickly. And the ways you do that is the governor issues something called a message of necessity. I don't know, other than street naming, and it's maybe overstating it a little bit, but I don't know there's a bill that has ever been passed up in Albany without a message of necessity. And this was, Schneiderman, he's not wrong in what he tried to do, but nobody thought about the effect on all of a sudden. And when I said, hey, people are going to park in front of fire hydrants, fires can't get water at the corner, the elderly can't get across. Oh, all of a sudden, everybody woke up. And then in all fairness to Schneiderman,
fixed it. They fixed it.
Okay, let's get on to the next. But the sin is that they didn't all think about it, and they should have they should take time and have hearings and give people time to understand it and input. That's not the way it's done. But in all fairness to the city council, it is the way they do it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got a bunch of folks that have some questions for you. We will get to them. We will do that next. All right, 6 before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, we got a bunch of folks here. Let's start right at the top line. Number one, that's Brad. Brad, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I would like to know why right turn on red is not legal in New York City. It is legal in a number of other cities. It's legal in Long Island. It's legal all over.
Yeah, but it's legal in most places. New York City, the argument has always been that it's too busy, too many people carsing at the corner, and there's never been a big constituency for it. You can argue that when it's quiet and there's no traffic, it would make a lot of sense. But the bottom line, Brad, is it's not going to happen. Nobody needs the big political battle. There's not a big constituency for it. But, yeah, there are cases when I'm with you. It would be a lot easier. There's no other traffic. Why can't you do it? But the bottom line is you can. It's for local reasons.
All right, Judy, you're next. Good morning.
Okay.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, Judy. You're up with the mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I heard on NPR the beaches are tested for pathogens weekly, and this week the pathogen level exceeded the safe level. Is it safe to swim at Coney Island?
Call 311 and they'll tell you, but if the beaches are closed, we put up signs and we try to publicize it. I haven't heard that they have a problem. Generally, the problems occur when you have an enormous rainstorm. The water from the streets overwhelms the ability of the sewage system to process it, and the overflow goes into the water, and then that pollutes, and it takes a little while for the natural processes to get it out.
I talked about that with Peter King this week. He and Tim Bishop working on putting a lot more money into upgrading.
We would love it. I mean, I was at a town meeting one time, and somebody said, when are all the sewers going to be upgraded? And this guy was one of our deputy commissioners, said, probably about 50 years. It was an honest answer, but a lot of booze.
Maybe. Judy, thanks for the phone call. This is John in Manhattan. John, good morning. You've got Mayor Bloomberg.
John.
Good morning. Mayor Bloomberg, I'd like to know, I'd like to make a donation to a charity here in New York City, and I was wondering if you could tell me the name of a charity that I can make an anonymous donation to, donation?
There's a lot of different ones. I mean, my first answer would be the Mayor's Fund to Improve New York, because they take the money and do a lot of different things with it. But call 311 and they'll give you... if not the names of different ones, where you go on the web and you can find different ones. And I would be careful just to do ones that you can do a little bit of research on and know or you've heard of, because there are, unfortunately, some scams out there. But there's lots of things, and congratulations trying to make the world better and help kids and everybody else. You should have a big smile on your face tonight. I'll remember you.
All right. Another John, this time in Paramus. John, you've got Mayor Bloomberg. Go.
Good morning. Why did the city settle the Sean Bell case?
Well, the decision to settle or not is always made by, ultimately, it's, I guess, the mayor, but the corporation council, maybe he has the final authority. You decide what the court is like, what a trial is likely to cost the city, what the danger of a very big settlement is, and whether you should settle it or not. In some cases, there's a matter of principle involved. In some cases, the facts are overwhelmingly against you. In most cases, it's a little bit ambiguous, but the lawyers have to make a judgment. Part of the difference is what borough the suit is brought in, because boroughs tend to have different results, and juries tend to act differently. District attorneys act differently. You know, it's a diverse place. And in this case, the city felt that this settlement was given the facts in this case and what a jury was likely to do, we would be better off settling for this amount, even though it's a lot of money, instead of running the risk. And it has nothing to do, we can have a conversation separately about behavior and whether the tragedies that befall us, but these decisions are made pure and simple on the economics, with the one or two exceptions every once in a while where there really is a principle involved and you just can't settle.
I don't want to blindside you, but do you know approximately how much the city pays in settlements every year? It's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
$100 million.
Half a billion dollars, if I had to guess a number like that. Yeah, because we're the deep pockets, and we have, you know, we have 700 lawyers in the Corporation Council office, and then every agency has their own. City gets sued all the time. It's and that's just the real world. We have to defend ourselves. What the Corporation Council has done the last 8 years, there used to be thousands and thousands of suits and backlog. He's brought it all down to we're almost current. Michael Cardoza and that whole agency's done a heck of a job.
All right, Damon is going to be, I think, probably the last one up here. Damon, what's your question for Mayor Bloomberg?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
And John. Quick question for you. I'm wondering if you could do our country a favor and run for president. It's a pleasure to hear a straight-talking politician.
Well, here, here.
Damon, you're nice to say
here,
so.
Here, I agree.
You know, I got a full-time job now. They only pay me a dollar a year, which is 93 cents in my paycheck after FICA. That's per year. I'll stay right here, the city I love. I've got 1,251 days left in this term, and, I'm going to work them.
I know you thought about it, so you obviously would have liked.
Everybody always says, when you complain, you say, if I were there, I could do it better. Let me tell you, I've been there at least the city level. If difficult things had simple solutions, we would have done it. I'm going to support the president, and as much as I can, we need a successful president. I think Republicans and Democrats should do that. And then as you get near the end of this president's first term, if you want to run against him, I don't, but if you did or you want to support somebody else, that's fine. But this country has to pull together and support both sides of the aisle, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. It's got to work together.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll put it off for another week. We'll see you next Friday. Have yourself a very good weekend, and that same goes to all of you as well. 9 o'clock. See you Monday.